Blog Talk Radio.
Wheresoever you go throughout the world, the black man is discarded, is ostracized, is relegated to the lowest in things, social, political, and economical. This therefore suggests a problem and one that must be solved. We in this section of the world are not entirely free from this unkind, unsympathetic, and uncharitable behavior of the groups or races around us. But since man has been placed on his own responsibility, whether he be black, white, or yellow, he must act on his own account. We will not unduly whine or complain, but reason among ourselves and see what can be done to remedy this state of affairs. Life is a conflict. You have to fight your way through it, whether you will it or not. Those of us who are able to fight most stubbornly live, accomplish most, and to them go the laurels, the palms, and triumph of our civilization and world. We unfortunately have not been trained nor educated to the truths of life, paradoxically so. May I say something to you to give you a true knowledge of yourself and life, so that the same glory and success attained by other men who understand themselves may be yours. Man in the full knowledge of himself is a superb and supreme creature of creation. When man becomes possessor of the knowledge of himself, he becomes master of his environment, the captain of his own ship, the director of his own destiny, the accomplisher of his own ends. Man should understand himself because man is full of knowledge, and this knowledge is a gift of nature. When Mother Nature created man, she deprived him of nothing. He was given the faculty of understanding all things around him. And this faculty for understanding has not been taken away from him. None of his senses have been taken away from him. So there is no excuse for the black man in lacking the knowledge that man is used to beautify the world and produce all that he needs for his happiness and civilization. Look the world over and whatever you see in it that is pleasing to man, contributing to man's comfort, to his needs and to his satisfaction, it is but the work of man. Man blessed with the knowledge of himself and the understanding of all things around him. If you are able to live with the knowledge of yourself and with the greater knowledge of nature, you must know what is good and what is not. You must know what is finite. You must know that which is material, physical, and otherwise is at your disposal to create or otherwise use. If we leave America and go over to the east to Japan, they will be telling their fellow citizens of Japan of the wonderful accomplishments of the Japanese people, proving that man is moving onward as time moves on. But you have hated yourselves as you have done in previous years. You have shown malice, prejudice, and hate to each other. And the result is that while other races have made progress, while India has made progress towards nationalism, while Ireland has made progress towards republicanism, while the whole world has made progress in man's accomplishments, you still stand fighting yourselves, dishonoring yourselves, showing no disposition toward that higher life so that you will be abundantly blessed. So reflect and think that you were created for some purpose other than exhibiting malice toward your neighbor or fellow men of your own race. What a pity it is that we cannot stand united without the written law. There is no written law compelling other races to stand together. They are brought together by the gentle touch of nature. The unwritten law of nature causes them to stand together on all occasions. So wheresoever you find them in the field, that one gentle touch of nature causes them to stand together, if need be, die together. But with the black man, you can preach to him from the pulpits. You lecture from the platforms, from the byways and the hedges. The spirit of cooperation, but he will not cooperate. You talk to him gently, you try talking harshly to him, he still will not cooperate. The result is that he falls prey to those who understand themselves and walk through the world making you their serfs and slaves. We must acquire the higher knowledge of life. Black men and black women, will you get the knowledge that the white man has that causes him to be leaders and masters in the world? They are not gods with a peculiar source for understanding the world around them. They have only given expression to the knowledge of their humanity and been able to use and conquer all to their satisfaction and glory. And that is why they are always greater than you in every community that you find them. Isn't it strange that wheresoever the white man is found, he takes precedence over you? Why is that so? Answer that for yourselves, black men and black women. Wheresoever you come in contact with the white man, you always have to go down in defeat before him. Whether it be in England, in France, or in America, you always have to go down to the white man, and yet he has two eyes, two feet, two hands, same passions, same senses and feelings as you have. Your feet are not put on opposite sides, now your hands turned around the other way. But it's because you failed to use your will, your knowledge, and your mental faculty to the point where you will enjoy life around you. It is against us as an African people. It's not because of color. It's because of our condition. If we must have justice, we must be strong. If we must be strong, we must come together. If we must come together, we can only do so through the system of organization. Let's fight for Africa. that teaches you to depend upon another race is a leadership that will enslave you. They gave leadership to our foreparents, and that leadership made them slaves. But we've decided to find a leadership of our
African problem. Either Africans find a solution to African problem, or there is no solution. And if you don't find a solution soon, you go back into slavery.
They gave me another assignment. They didn't pick me up to go to the assignment. I followed their instructions and waited at the hotel. I would love to be here when I can be more fully in depth on this subject, because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world. There's a whole lot of illusions about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these belief systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And that's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion was meant to dominate and to control. The Arabs had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive? You let people redress something that you invented, send it back to you, and enslave you through it. I'm saying that all organized present religions are male chauvinist murder cults. And I say there is no exception. Well, I wanted to be here early. I wanted to deal with our relationship with the people of the world and the fact that we created peaceful nations that had no word for jail because no one had ever gone to one. No word for old people's homes because no one ever threw away grandma and grandpa. No word for orphanage. We did all of this. And over half of human civilization was over before we knew that a European was in the world. Before he wore a shoe or lived in a house that had a window. Now, Africa has always and still is the prize for the whole world. We as a people have always been the world's richest people, culturally rich, mineral rich. We have always been the prize because we have always had and still have something that other people won't, think they can't do without, and don't care to pay for. Because we have always been the prize, we have been under siege for over 3,000 years. Nothing that ever brought into Africa from the outside was meant to do the Africans any good. That means all other religions. Islam was the handmaiden of Arab imperialism. Christianity was the handmaiden of European imperialism. The Hebrew faith was the handmaiden of a concept called the chosen people. Now, if God is kind and God is merciful and God has no stepchildren, he won't choose one over the other. And to say he chose some people, you're making him a bigot. And to say that he endorsed enslavement of one people over the other, you're making him an accessory to murder. The Arabs used Islam to rationalize their slavery and their imperialism. The Europeans used Christianity to rationalize their slavery and imperialism. Who are you kidding about friends in the world? Damn it, if you want a friend, look in the mirror. drunken people on the face of this earth. Why are you buying third-rate junk from third-rate people thinking you can't make it? Why don't you at least make a safety pin to hold your child's diaper together? Who has programmed your mind to thinking you can't make a car? The first man that made a car that had never seen one previously. The Japanese bought cars, bought locomotives, broke them down and studied them, and had a Japanese technician produce each piece, put it together, and had a much better train than the one they copied from. All knowledge in the world belongs to everybody in the world.
Yes.
Who has programmed our mind in assuming that we cannot run a nation and run it well? The main thing imperialism did, slavery and imperialism, they removed African people from the respectful commentary of history. And they tell them, something they are still telling them, and all of the organized religions are guilty of this. I favor none of it because Africa didn't need any of it. I'm saying that African belief systems, properly understood, is 10 times better than Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And better for the African. Now you might have some romance with one of these religions. I have no romance with any of them. I have a romance with reality and truth. And the chips can fall where they may after I tell it. As for friends, you have had no friends. When they discovered you, they began to prey on you. Now let's look at our relationship with Western Asia, mistakenly called the Middle East. For 3,000 years, our greatest enemies came from Western Asia. They were trying to avenge the fact that they were once African colonies. You read a book called When Egypt Ruled the East, and you get some of the basic information on this. Now, the first visitors to Africa came in the 1700 B.C. These were the people who would later be called Hebrews. Now, black people are ticklish on this because black people think that everything in the Bible is true. I question the intelligence of anyone who thinks everything in the Bible is true or supposed to be true. It's allegory, stories told to illustrate a point at a time when there were very few people reading books. And most of what went into the making of the Bible was copied from Egyptian texts. Now, if you want to get so dewy-eyed over the Bible, which is a carbon copy of a carbon copy, why don't you go back and read the original Egyptian text? Then you see where all these stories started from. You see where the story of the Exodus started from. Now, you get so dewy-eyed, you actually think there was an Exodus. These people walked into Africa. Why couldn't they walk out? Why did they have to go by sea? Why did he have to pause? If you read Egyptian literature, you will discover that the whole story of somebody parting the sea started with about 3,000 years before the Hebrew entrance. I should not use the word Hebrew entrance, but the entrance from Western Asia. Now let's get one thing straight, because black people are confused about all religions. Now I'm not against any religion. I'm a very spiritual human being. I just don't need a preacher to preach no Ten Commandments to me when he's a backslider going with some sister, some other man's wife. I'm intelligent enough to pick from the Ten Commandments, not commandments anyway, but they were omissions of purity at the great school at Luxor, the great African training school. All right, now, let's get into this Western Asia. I'm saying that the people who came from Western Asia escaping famine did not have any Hebrew faith when they came into Africa. And there's no record of a Hebrew faith before there. Why is it that when they left Africa in the so-called Exodus, they had all three?
African culture, an African religion, and an African language. Now look at the origin of so-called people you now refer to as Jews. You're mistaken using that reference because the word Jew is of European origin. And the people in Europe who call themselves by their name have no relationship to the biblical people of the Hebrew faith. And I'm saying that the people we now call Jews entered world history with their visit to Africa. And when Africa was invaded, 1675 B.C., instead of joining the Africans who had been their beneficiary and saved them from starvation, they joined the enemies of Africa. No one has ever returned any favors to us. As a people, we have always been hospitable to strangers, mostly the wrong strangers. And what we have to understand now, in the period of superior brainwashing, is that there is no European answer for African problems. Either Africans find a solution to African problems, or there is no solution, and if you don't find a solution soon, you go back into slavery. We have to stop all of this nonsense about who belongs to what religion when all of them were imposed on us in the first place. We stop all this fight between Muslims and Christians when neither one of the religions are doing them any good or moving them toward independence. All of them are handmaids of conquerors. All of them are religions of conquerors. We were naive when we accepted their interpretation of something that we had all along. I'm saying we need to take a good look at ourselves. I'm not talking about burning churches. I'm not talking about getting rid of religion. Understand me well. I am saying that every single thing that touches your life, religious, socially, and politically, must be an instrument of your liberation, or you must throw it into the ash can of history. Develop a liberation Islam. Yes. And if you develop a liberation Islam, you'd have to turn on the supreme slave traders who were in the slave trade 1,000 years before the Europeans, the Arabs. Yes. And most brothers who think they're Muslims are merely Arabic forerunners, vanguards of Arab propaganda. The Arabs are not above joining the Jews against black people. In America, they're already doing it in Detroit. In America, they're already doing it in real estate. You got some dewy eyes saying that you got a friend. I still ask you to look at that mirror. And if nothing staring back at you is friendly, then you've got no friends. This is where you start, friends. All right. I'm saying something which you need to reconsider. I'm saying that everything that came into Africa, every people that came into Africa, did not come to do Africa any good. Everyone and every religion and every people who came into Africa declared war on African culture. They began the bastardization of African people, created confused mulatto who didn't know whether he'd be loyal to his mother's people or his father's people. That confusion is still here. The fascination for the color of the conqueror and the fascination to go to bed with the conqueror. Now that's raw and mean, but it's true. Now, sometime ago, a North African leader, Gaddafi, was sending some Libyans to study in Europe. And he told them what any good nationalist would tell students going to study. I'm not sending you to Europe to find a wife. I'm sending you to Europe to gain the technology to come back and make Libya a strong nation, a strong Islamic nation, and a strong Arab nation. And you cannot achieve any of this between the legs of a European woman. Woo!
somebody going to get strong enough to tell Africans going to school, you're going to come back home and pair up with a sister. But if you want to pair up over there, stay over there. Now, the one thing we have to look at, and I'm sorry, I'm going to have to conclude on this because I've left out a body of information. At the university, I teach an entire course, semester course, on Africa's relationship to other people. And I devote several semesters to Africa before Europe, the consequences of the coming of the Greeks, who stole a lot that they think is their culture, stole a lot that you think is Greek philosophy. We've been the victims of propaganda. And yet, if you read the Journal of African Civilization, other works, we have lived in Europe, we've lived in Asia, we've lived in the Americas. The African people have already proved that they can get along with different people, amalgamate their culture with different people without one hint of a war between us. People who come into Africa immediately declare war on African culture, standards of beauty, standards of conduct, and change the African concept of theirs so they can rule through him. This was true of the Greeks who began the bastardization, again, the European bastardization of Africa. The Western Asians had begun it 3,000 years before that. The Romans, a bunch of well-dressed thugs who could write well but couldn't think, who borrowed practically everything. They laughed at the African concept of Christianity. The African was practicing and not giving it a name. This is why you don't know nothing about the African origins of Christianity. This is why a whole lot of people will not read Ben Yorkinen's The African Origins of the Major Western Religions, Africa, Mother of Western Civilization, a black man of the Nile. Because he's telling it like it is, but you also will not read white radicals who identified Africa as the origin of the great religions of the world, especially Alvin Boyd Kuhn in his work, Who is This King of Glory? In Shadow of the Third Century. We have dealt with John Jackson, another radical black historian, with man, God, and civilization. We let some of our great scholars die in hunger, die wanting for friendship. Now, having devoted my greater portion of my life to scholarship and teaching and digging up information on African people and trying to make African people face reality, I have often said, a point that I wish you to consider, I didn't have to do it. I chose to do it, and if I had to do it over again, I would do it better. Than the talent to teach and to research. I've never met a rich man who had a better mind than me. So if I wanted to succeed as a rich man, I could have done that. I never met a crook who wasn't a fool. I could have been a good crook if I chose to be a crook. I chose to be a teacher of African history. I chose to look in the Bible where I couldn't find my people. I started looking for this in the world, and I didn't stop until I found them. And I know why they were left out of the Bible. I know why all the angels are white. You mean to tell me God is merciful, God is kind, and not one little brown or black angel sneaked into hell? I ain't buying that. Now, the Bible that you get so dewy-eyed over is one of the greatest pieces of propaganda ever written. If you want to read the Bible, why don't you read the Bible one day and read Mein Kampf the next day and see the comparison? That's hard on your mind.
Because you think if you don't have Christianity, Islam, or Judaism, you don't have that spirituality. I've got more spirituality after I put all of them down. And I've got more religion after I put all of them down. All right, now let me conclude something that has no conclusion. We have to look at the impact of Europeans on Africa. All impacts have been negative. The Romans laughed at the early African Christians. Finally, for political reasons, they stopped killing Christians and became Christians. I'm saying the Europeans became Christians for political reasons, as the Arabs became Muslim for political reasons, and as the so-called Jews became Hebrews for political reasons. People use organizations for political reasons, and what we get so dewy-eyed and think we're dealing with, oh, it's the truth. If you look at indigenous African religious belief systems, if you look at the idea when Africans had no churches of any consequence, because these fools came here and said, this is the house of God, and the African looked at that church and said, if God who made the wind, the spring, made the ocean roar, and you gonna tell me he can fit into a little thing you call a church? That is no house of God. So some of them had the common sense enough to move away from it, and some had the common sense to burn it down. I'm saying that you're closer to God when the further way you get away from organized religions that are all handmaidens of conquest. The Roman Empire developed during the early period of Christianity. Remember, the Roman Empire started in Africa. It rose in Africa. It fell in Africa. A lot of people need to stop reading some religious books and read some straight history without fables, without suppositions, without myth. Read straight history. Read the Mediterranean world in ancient times. She's a racist bigot, but her chronology is good. And there's a good history of the Europeans trying to move out of Europe into the Mediterranean to find something to eat to put on that gosh darn awful European food. He has solved his problems at the expense of other people. The slave trade liberated Europe from the depressed economy they had created with the so-called Crusades and through the famines and the plague. Europe always solved its problems by preying on people outside of Europe. They are in a position right now that they have betrayed true socialism, which was not of European origin in the first place. And some people are confused between Karl Marx and Groucho Marx. I think a lot of people are Groucho Marxism instead of Karl Marxism. They're funny people. And if you think that that system started in Europe, no system as humane as socialism could have started among a bunch of icebox people who pay on their brothers for their breakfast. Read Carmen Colson's work, The History of the Modern World, especially the early chapters. Now, the evidence of Africans in the New World, the evidence of 1,000 years of civilization before slavery, all of this I'm not discussing because there is no time. But when the Romans disgraced themselves in the mismanagement of Christianity, they created a vacuum. Islam moved into that vacuum. The Africans thought that Islam would get the Romans off of their back. They were right. Islam got the Romans off of their back, and the Arabs jumped on their back, and they're still there. Using Islam to justify it. Now, the African military man, because we are the greatest fighting machine in the face of the earth, if we ever discovered this, people going to start running. Under proper leadership, proper inspiration, properly equipped, The black man is the greatest human fighting machine God ever created, if indeed God created it. I say the gods of Africa created it. Once you lose track of your heritage, you lose track of your liberty in this world. The Europeans doing the slave trade not only read the African out of history, they colonized history, they colonized information about history. They colonized image. They colonized the image of God. Who told you Christ was white? He was born in that part of the world predominantly occupied by non-European people. So you should not get into the argument about whether he's white. All you have to say, was he a Greek? No. Was he a Roman? No. But these were the only people partially white in the area at the time. If he wasn't a Greek, he wasn't a Roman, he was one of those other people. You don't have to argue about the shades of color. So far as you're concerned, once you establish he was not a woman, he was not a Greek, your conversation is over. Now, if somebody else want to argue about his shade, well, that's their problem. And if you got a problem with color, then you got a problem with your mother and your father. You have insulted your mother and your father if you don't like what they gave you. I wear mine like a badge of honor. I dig it. I wear it well.
All right. Love it.
I'm saying, in closing, and I am closing, that what you have to do is take a holistic look. Not only at your position in the world, but your potential in the world. You have to learn how to convert everything into an instrument of liberation or leave it alone. You have to realize there were no Greek fraternities and sororities until they were introduced to secret African societies. People get all dewy-eyed over something that was imposed on them in order to control them without understanding that. That's another imperial effort. So it bothers me, and although I have good personal friends who are Muslim, that not a single Muslim scholar have dealt with that 1,000 years of African independence before slavery and how the Arabs from the north systematically destroyed these nations. They actually, it did not occur. 1591, from Morocco, an army was launched against these great independent nations in inner West Africa. These were great states. Because of poor communication between African and African, there was enough army in these states to march down to the coast and to drive every slave trader into the sea. But the communication between African and Africa was so poor. Even today, the East Africa is not too clear about what's happening in West Africa. And nobody knows what's happening in North Africa because the conspiracy to hold on to Africa is happening in South Africa and in North Africa. So the whites in South Africa are willing to play a part, and the pseudo-whites in North Africa are willing to play a part. In all this world, you have no friends, but if there are a billion of you on the face of this earth, scattered all over the world, what do you need with a friend other than yourself? Why can't you turn inward on yourself and say, I will wear no clothes I don't produce. Start with your underwear. I wear no shoes that's not made by a brother. You're creating a shoe factory, employment at once. Start buying aeroplanes, break them down and study them, later on make aeroplanes. What this whole thing is about is the restoration of confidence. It has been the role of these handmaidens of colonialism to destroy your confidence in yourself. You don't believe that you can look like a god. You don't believe a black father in your home. It's to some extent a god. That doesn't make the black woman less than a goddess. Because we produced the first human society that recognized and respected the female god.
We produced the first human society that said you can't be a king unless you got a queen. You can't be a god unless you got a goddess. So you can see all of these social ills that people are defending now, none of it started in our countries. I defy anyone alive, and those who want to come alive, come back and prove me, I invite them too, to show me one single case of sexual deviance or maladjustment any place on the African continent for the coming of foreigners. I defy you to show me one case of teenage pregnancy, one case of ill treatment of women. We got confused with someone else's ideas, someone else's concept and definition of us. What we have to understand is that faith has not spared us for an idle reason. A whole lot of people who've been hit less than us are extinct. What is there in us that made us strong enough to take this heavy blow? 500 years of slavery, one way or the other. Slavery, neocolonialism. What made us strong enough to survive? What has faith saved us to do? And inasmuch as we gave the world its first humanity, faith has saved us to give the world its last humanity. What we have to do is to believe it, to believe that we are worthy of it, and to believe that we are capable of it. What black studies should be about, what black religion should be about, is the restoration of the confidence, and the restoration of the confidence that we must rule the state again. That is not an imitation nation, that not an independent nation in Africa or the Caribbean Islands. They're all imitation European states. And what we have to understand is that the nation state is stagnant. The African did not live in a nation state. He lived in a territorial state. The African learned something very basic. Cultures have to be fertilized by cultures. People have to be fertilized by the interaction between cultures and cultures. This insecure European tightened his borders. You know, you got a passport to come here? The word passport is not in any African language. The things he invented to restrict himself, he imposed on other people. Once we gain confidence in ourselves, and once we look at that person staring back at us from that mirror and like what we see, and don't move from that mirror until you like what you see. Then, in coordination with other African people throughout the world, we will give the world a new lease on life. We will turn to all of our people and not one part of them, because we came from a matrilineal society that respected women to the point the lineage came down to the female side. We must answer the call of the great African-American poet, Margaret Walker, who said, let the dirges end. Let a new peace begin. Let us write a new covenant for the freedom of ourselves in the world. African men throughout the world need to step forward and answer Sister Margaret and say, Sister Margaret, we have heard your call, and because we have never been a society that excluded women, with our women at our side, we are ready to pick up the challenge. We are ready to start a revolution that will change the world. We won't get ready tomorrow because tomorrow's things are left to tomorrow. We will start our revolution
right now, and we will start it with ourselves.
Thank you.
Don't know about that, this is a jumper, yeah.
Tonight, the issues and the controversy. 1,000 people have gathered at the City College of New York for a town meeting with Nelson Mandela.
Mr. Mandela, you're participating in what is a very old and honorable American tradition, the town meeting. And rather than waste any time with my questions, if they don't ask you good ones, I promise I will try to.
Those of us who share your struggle for human rights and against apartheid have been somewhat disappointed by the models of human rights that you have held up since being released in jail. You've met over the last 6 months 3 times with Yasser Arafat. Are these your models of leaders of human rights? And if so, would you want a Gaddafi or an Arafat or a Castro to be a future president of South Africa?
One of the mistakes which some political analysts make is to think that their enemies should be our enemies. Attitude towards any country is determined by the attitude of that country to our struggle. Yasser Arafat, Colonel Gaddafi, Fidel Castro support our struggle to the hilt. They do not support it only in rhetoric. They are placing resources at our disposal for us to win the fight. That is the position.
Mr. Mandela, as I mentioned to you before the program, we also have some distinguished guests sitting behind us, one of whom, Mr. Henry Sigmund, together with 2 other Jewish leaders, came to Geneva to visit with you precisely because they were so concerned not only by the kind of thing that you just said before the break with regard to Yasser Arafat, with regard to Libya's Colonel Gaddafi, but also because of the support that you seemed at different times to give to the PLO. I would like to ask Mr. Sigmund to stand now for a moment and pose whatever question he would like directly to you. Mr. Sigmund?
I think I would be dishonest if I did not express profound disappointment with the answer that Mr. Mandela gave to the previous question, because it suggests a certain degree of amorality.
As far as Yasser Arafat is concerned, I explained to Mr. Sigmund that we identified with the PLO because just like ourselves, they are fighting for the right of self-determination.
Mr. Mandela, thank you very much. We have ripped through the first part of this broadcast extraordinarily quickly. There are still a number of issues that we have to take up with Mr. Mandela, not the least of them being sanctions by the United States against South Africa. We will continue with that in the Nightline segment of this broadcast. Just a quick break now. We'll be back. And we are back once again at the City College of New York with Nelson Mandela. And Mr. Mandela, we have just heard a number of the things that you said in our hour between 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock this evening. Some controversial things, not the kinds of things necessarily that a very political man says. If you were very political, you might have been more concerned about not alienating some people in this country who have it within their hands, within their power, either to continue sanctions against South Africa or to raise those sanctions, to lift them. Why were you not a little more political? Perhaps we're too accustomed to politicians in this country.
I do not understand what you mean. Perhaps if you clarify what you are referring to, I may be in a position to comment.
What I'm saying is that in this country, for example, there has been for many years a close alliance between the Jewish population and the black population in the civil rights struggle. There is likely to be a rather negative reaction to some of the things that you have said. That reaction could very well cause people to call up their congressmen, their senators, and say, go ahead, lift the sanctions. Why not? After all, President de Klerk is doing a great deal against apartheid. Only today, in fact, his number two man, Gerrit Viljoen, said that the government perceives itself in South Africa as being part of the anti-apartheid struggle.
As far as the Jewish question to begin with, I have had discussions at my own initiative with prominent Jewish leaders to straighten out this affair. Amongst the people I saw was Mrs. Helen Suzman, who has been an MP in our country for more than 30 years. There was Mr. Mason, who has been a judge in Lesotho, Botswana, and the old Rhodesia. There was the chief rabbi of Johannesburg. There was Professor Katz from the University of Witwatersrand and an eminent community leader in South Africa. We discussed this question and all misunderstanding was clear, the question of Yasser Arafat and the PLO. I have also discussed the question with the Jewish leaders in the USA and very top people like Mr. Sigmund. We reached an agreement on this question and we saw eye to eye. Now, I don't know where your concern arises. These Jewish leaders themselves are able to determine their own affairs. Nobody else is entitled to say that the Jewish leaders are going to be concerned about your stand. Because I have had the discussions with them and those discussions will reach consensus. But there are matters, of course, which we did not agree. But the position which we take as the ANC, I thought we were able to explain it in such a way that it removed the concern of the Jewish community.
Let's broaden it out.
I am still prepared to do that even in this talk. If the Jewish leader have any doubts about our stand, I am prepared to address them and to allay their concern, because they are a very important community both in South Africa and, of course, in the States. And I'm prepared to iron out any differences that might exist. But they must know what our stand is. Arafat is a comrade in arms, and we treat him as such. We have many Jews, members of the Jewish community in our struggle, and they have occupied very top positions. But that does not mean to say that the enemies of Israel are our enemies. We refuse to take that position. You can call it being political or a moral question, but for anybody who changes his principles depending on whom he is dealing, that is not a man who can lead a nation. apparently, Mr. Copper, you have not listened to my argument. If you have done so, then you have not been serious in examining it. I have replied to one of our friends here that I have refused to be drawn into the differences that exist between various communities inside the USA. You have not commented that I am going to offend anybody by refusing to involve myself in the internal affairs of the USA. Why are you so keen that I should involve myself in the internal affairs of Cuba and Libya?
No.
I expect you to be consistent. I don't know if I have paralyzed you.
No.
Thank you. tell me, say you have something to tell me. No, you see me right now, please tell me. You can't deny my love. You can't deny my love. Sexy Aitania, come sing for me.
Moment of honesty. Someone's gotta say to me tonight. It's gonna be.
Make sure.
I'm gonna sit right here and tell you what comes to me.
Honey, me tonight of the night, everything up is sealed up. My love is like work hard, we want wheel up. Tell me how you feel about me for the deal up. Me stand up on my two foot, them in a heel up. You are act like so you are athletic. My love is pure Charlie. You tell me to your next man, where are the box? So what the hell you want with Charlie Black? Please tell me.
Oh, comes to love, he delivers. My personal UPS, I'm sending him an SOS that I
businessman, and I'm on the road a lot. I'll be honest, it can get hard sometimes, being away from the kids, the house, the home cooking, even Roscoe the family dog. But it's the hardest being away from my wife. I miss her laugh, her touch, her smile, but most of all, the smell of her pussy. That's why I choose Rent-A-Pussy, the only car that actually smells like a pussy. Each car smells like a pussy. You choose the degree of pussy smell you want, and they got it. Choose from menstrual, pre-menstrual, sweaty, douche, skanky, and my personal favorite, yeasty. Now those long trips from home won't be so bad. You get the smell of pussy without the body that comes with it. He knows what I'm talking about. Rent-A-Puss. Our cars smell like pussy.
Radio, I mentioned to, well, not on the radio, we didn't make it to the show yet with this, but I said to Andre one morning, I asked him, did he believe that racism existed? And he said, yes. And I said, well, before the show is over today, I'm going to prove to you that there's no such thing as racism. It has never existed at all. And so he was trying to prove it. We talked about it a little bit. Then I had Doug on the show Friday and asked him if he thought racism existed. And he said, yes. Doug is the computer guy, for those who don't know. And I said, give me an example of racism existing. And he said, there's a war between Hitler, Germany, and the Jews, right? He mentioned that. He said, that was racism. Then I was told by someone this morning, that's not racism, because both of those people were white. The Jews and the Germans were both white. And so that wasn't a good example of racism. But I want to ask, how many people believe that racism exists?
Just now or in the past?
Period. Anytime. Now, anytime.
For example, you can look at, to me, the definition of racism is one group of people oppressing another group based on race and, you know, taking advantage of them economically and all that kind of stuff. So, for example, I think South Africa is a good example of that. You had a white white power structure that basically dominated and, you know, took advantage of a subservient class of people that were, you know, really primarily based on race.
Based on them being black.
I don't think it's so much it exists in this country today, but I think it has existed. It does exist in other places. The Middle East, I think, in a lot of the Arab nations. Are outright racist against blacks and other races.
Okay. What do you say, Forrest? Does racism exist?
No, it doesn't exist.
It doesn't? Why do you say no? Yes. Go ahead, Forrest.
See, hatred exists, but people point their hatred at a group of racial people because they see how stupid they act. like, for instance, blacks, 95% of them vote for Obama, and our country's going down the drain. That's not racism. That's pointing their hatred at somebody who's making a dumb decision. And you can pick out various other groups of people that make dumb decisions, and people point their hatred at those people. And it's hatred. It's not racism.
Okay. So he says, no, racism doesn't exist. Yes, no.
What about when you say that most racists are, or most blacks are racist towards whites?
I'm going to have to change that word now.
All right, I got you.
Yeah. I was bad until I was able to see. Yes, sir, right here. And then we're coming over here. All right. Does racism exist, yes or no?
No.
And why do you say no?
First, I'll give you what racism used to mean. Racism used to mean in the slave days that you were inferior to your inferior human, that you weren't a complete human, like an animal. You were
eventually... Make a long story short, because I'm only have 10 minutes.
Racism today means I don't like what you're saying.
Okay. That's a good point.
Does not exist.
Does racism exist?
It does.
It does exist?
Yes.
What's your proof?
That these groups, these race groups have gone after each other based on just their race.
How do you know it's based on just race?
Because they do some wonderful things, and then they get to feeling superior, and then they start to look down on the others, on the others that's not of their race.
But how do you know it's just based on the color, though, instead of something else?
Well, it is. It's based on what they have or have not done, but then they'll look at it as a general, they're all like that.
Let me ask this.
Racism means they're all like that.
Let me ask
this. All the people in that race have that fault.
Let me ask this.
Or have that credit.
Does the Bible speak about racism, discrimination based on color? Is that in the Bible anywhere?
Actually, that's a good question, and I don't remember coming across that.
Don't you think Jesus would have mentioned that at least somewhere walking down the road?
I think he would have.
And if it was based on color, he would have mentioned it?
Yeah, now he mentioned them bad Samaritans.
Right, but he does. But he didn't mention racism based on color, right?
No, he mentioned just that the salvation is of the Jews.
So it's not in the Bible, right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, let me ask, because you know the Bible.
Correct.
You may not know anything else, but you know the Bible.
Right.
Right? And that's not in the Bible.
Not that I know of.
Okay. But is it in the Bible that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but spirits and principalities and wickedness in high places?
At this point, I'm becoming a hostile witness. I'm forced to answer to help your case. Yes, that is true.
I'm sorry?
Yes, that is true.
That everything is spiritual, and every fight is spiritual.
That's what it says.
It says nothing about color, right?
It doesn't say anything about color in that.
Hold your head. Hold the mic up or something. Hold your mic up. Why are you holding it like that?
There you go. Yeah. Okay. I was going down to the mic.
I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about that.
So how did we come up with this word racism then?
Because of the explanation I gave when I was explaining what a race is.
Let me tell you this. There's no such thing as racism. It's all an illusion. And that's what blind people do. When they can't see what's going on, they give you worldly definition of what, ego definitions of what things mean. And then when we fall for it because we can't see it, we become blind too. And we fight a warfare that cannot be won. And this is why this word racism is in every group now. The gays, the blacks, the women, the whatever, the Muslim, everybody uses racism because that's not what the problem is. The problem is spiritual. It's a spiritual issue. And when one group judges another group, they're not judging them based on black. They have made some other kind of moral decision about that group. Either they are immoral or they are whatever. And they have made that decision and judged that group based on that, on a spiritual thing. But instead of looking at that and understanding it, they give it a physical meaning. And so we start fighting a physical thing that doesn't exist. I guarantee you, if we can see spiritually and dealt with this in a spiritual way, whomever is judging their fellow man is a hateful person. They're not judging them because of their color. They're judging them because they're playing God and they're hateful. And if we dealt with it that way, this stuff would start to end. We would never end this thing called racism because it doesn't exist. It's an illusion. It's a spiritual battle. It's men and women making decisions about their fellow man. You're judging them. And for example, we all agree that most black people don't like white folks, right? But the thing about it, black people treat other black people worse than they treat white people because it's not based on the white man's color, but it's based on them hating what they think he has done. So it's all hatred. But instead of saying, you know, I hate you because I've judged you based on what I heard about you, they say, I hate you because of your color, because they're blind and can't see. Racism doesn't exist. It's a made-up word. And that's why we can't win. Well, you see it spiritually, good and evil. These people are evil. These people are right. These people are wrong. Based on morality or spirituality, then you can solve the problem. When I got over when God took my anger away, I used to be into my blackness. I used to wake up in the morning and think, well, I'm black. I'm not going to make it. That old white man's stopping me. But once I got over my hatred, then I never think about being black. You know what I mean? Because now I can see that things are spiritual instead of physical. But you got to wake up so you can see what's going on. Yes, ma'am. That's why when I'm doing shows, like TV shows and things, I mention spiritual things, everybody goes nuts. Because no one want to admit, most people don't want to admit that they are immoral, that they are hateful, that they are playing God, that they are judgmental. They don't want to hear that. They'd rather use a little word like racism, and we just have just a waste of time debating the word race. And then we end the show, and everybody feels good about being on the show. But nothing is solved. But you speak the truth, they have a hissy fit. After I woke up, I could see white Americans just like I would see black Americans. I just see what's going on. And it has nothing to do with the person's color at all. But when you're blind, you can't see beyond. You can't see what's going on. You're just looking at a physical person doing something and judging that person. I'm telling you, it doesn't exist. Yes, real fast.
You know, Jesus makes your same point in two different stories. One with the Good Samaritan, where he points out that it was this guy from the evil band of Samaritans who was actually the good man in the story.
Yes.
Even though, you know, there was Jews and everybody else passed by who didn't help the hurt stranger. And then the other one was where Jesus talked about that Roman. And a Roman wasn't with the Jews, and he says, I haven't seen such great faith in all of Israel.
That's right. I'm telling you, folks, when people yell at me, even the blacks who are yelling at me, they're not yelling at me because I'm black. They're yelling at me because of what I'm saying. And now they may say you're Uncle Tom because they're so shallow they can't see what's going on. They can only see with their physical eyes instead of the spiritual eyes. So they'll say, oh, you're Uncle Tom. But they're not mad about that. They're mad about what I'm saying because it's a spiritual thing going on. That's why you got to wake up to see that we got to be different from the world. We got to shine light on the light. When I realized that, I'm like, wow, that's true. There's no such thing as racism. It's another illusion. That's why God wants us to see so we don't judge the person. That way we won't be judged. We won't be condemned. You got to see beyond the person. You got to see beyond the lie to see what's going on. It's not about racism, folks. It's a spiritual thing. Did you have a point, Christine?
Well, yeah, it's going to probably be longer than we can do right now.
Yeah, I only have 1 minute.
Okay, maybe.
No, hit on it, in fact.
Slavery. I mean, that was based on color and people, you know.
No.
No, it
wasn't. Because there were black people who had slaves, too. And then in Africa, black people were selling black people to other people, to the Arabs and everybody and their mama. I'm telling you, it's not based on color at all. Nothing that we do in life is based on the physical. It's based on the spirit. It's what's driving us to do what we do and think like we think and see what we... Like Patrick was saying, his mind went on money, and now he's going to his computer trying to, almost with fear, trying to get money. He got money. He realized, wow, I'm caught up with the wrong thing. You're caught up with the wrong thing. That's why you have to drop your anger, forgive, so you can see what's going on.
For more information or to purchase a copy of this show,
Visit us on the web at www.bondinfo.org or call 1-800-411-BOND.
And so the hustlers continue to hustle, and the players continue to play.
Well, they have myself, man. What's that happening up there?
What? No fun?
I was just running around.
That's cool. Good, man.
You all right. All right.
I'm a man today.
Trying to be shady, that's just the way it goes. I gave it
personal, baby. Trying to be shady, that's just the way it goes. Now I'm not trying to be on my own dick, but I fell off in the club looking so slick. Was looking for something nice and chocolate. Didn't want to have to come up out my pocket.
Shawty's in here kinda right, satisfy my appetite, yeah.
But they know my steelo, gotta get with them on a deal-o. Now the meaning of the song is, baby, if you're about it, get it on. From the late night to the break of dawn, I'ma still get my pimp on. I came in the door pimping,
handling strictly business.
Nothing personal, baby, trying to be shady. That's just the way it goes. I came in the door pimping,
handling strictly business.
Well, nothing personal, baby, trying to be shady. That's just the way it goes.
Bitch, that's right, pimping hoes. Too short, baby, slamming Cadillac doors. I've been a Mac half my life. If I wanna have your wife, it won't take me too much. I'm gonna make it last all night. When you're dealing with my type, don't get caught up in the hype. I be taking all your bitch money, and you know that just ain't right. Cause you brought her to the club, but you didn't leave with her. Trying to figure how a player like Show Dog could get her. Somebody had to do it. She didn't really love you. Another pimp got your hoe, and you don't know what to do.
I came in the door pimping, nothing personal, baby, ain't trying to be shady. That's just the way it goes. Came in the door pimping,
handling strictly business.
Said it's nothing personal, baby, ain't trying to be shaded. That's just the way it goes, yeah. I got to handle my business.
Handling strictly
I came in the door pimping. Yeah, I got to handle my business, y'all. Yeah,
handling strictly business.
Jazzy Faye came through the door. Oh, 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 oh.
Handling strictly business.
I came in the door.
My sweet Lord. brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. War is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and tears here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
African problem. Either Africans find a solution to African problem or there is no solution. And if you don't find a solution soon, you go back into slavery.